Today, I think I'll use the word potential to suggest the possible. Our guest is Sharon E. Martin, an allopathic MD who broadened her own commitment in caring for others by studying shamanism and other energetic works. 20 years later, she is amplifying possibilities that elude most of Western medicine. Her book is Maximize Your Healing Power, and that's exactly what she's doing, helping folks every day. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Sharon, as someone who is a practicing MD trained in shamanic tradition and has written the newly published Maximize Your Healing Power, I think we'll be able to move into the outer limits and move into more about the potential of all of this work, which is being lived, I think, now more than many people know. So if it's okay with you, let's start with Fool's Crow. You've written about some of his miraculous capabilities and insights. And can you share an example and what can be learned as a jumping off point for us today?
So what I love about the frontiers of medicine are not the technology and the incredible surgeries or anything like that, but the role of consciousness and connection to the greater universe that appears to be happening with many miraculous healers. And one of my favorites, whom I've read about and actually meditated on, is Frank Fool's Crow, a Lakota Sioux elder and medicine man. He probably died, I think, in the 80s. He was almost 100 years old. And I've thought about, how does somebody do such miraculous things, such as insert a stone into somebody's body, pull the stone out, pulling the pneumonia with it, change, just really bringing in life force through prayer and ritual and connection to Great Spirit. And I think that we have examples, and some of the Hindu mystics and yogis could do this, could actually manifest. Frank Fool's Crow could manifest golden eagle feathers. In fact, his biographer, Thomas Means, was able to actually see that happen. So how can we do such miraculous healing as ordinary people in 2023? And I think the answers lie in our ability to connect to that universal field, and that universal field where the templates for right working of body parts, the right physiology, the way it was built and meant to be, or those templates exist, and the ability to restore those templates and have your cells and your physiology go back to working the way Great Spirit made them. So I'm excited about that idea of healing in the frontiers. I believe our frontiers are going to be that of consciousness.
Absolutely. You know, and I have a couple of questions about this. One of them is about, with modern medical technology happening, I mean, we can see so much more down into the minutest levels right now, right? With microscopes and the way they're doing surgeons.
Incredible. Yes. Into the genes, yep.
Yes, and surgeons are doing these microscopic surgeries into the neurosurgeons, what they're able to do. And they're actually, it's like they're in a movie and making the movie at the same time because of the way they're looking into these microscopes and into the literal brain. And so it's interesting, isn't it, how all of these things are leading us there, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. You're probably remembering, maybe you're not old enough to remember that movie. Was it Journey to the Center of the Earth, where they took you on a visualization of what it was like to go into the bloodstream. And anyway, what I often happens to me, often like more than once, not a regular every time, in guided visualizations or meditations, when I go deep, deep, deep into the earth, which to me, the body is really of the earth, and then all of a sudden I'm catapulted out into the galaxy. So I think that going more and more microscopic, we are getting down to the genetics, the actual DNA, but I think we're going to see quantum light packets. And I think that's going to be how we connect to the universal field, that we hit a vibration status. So we start to lose actual form, physiologic form, and we're in the realm of resonating vibratory currents. But that's just sort of my intuitive sense.
No, that's yours and many intuitive sense, I'm sure. When you are working within the medical system with shamanic trainings, as you do, how are you looking at the body? I'm sure you've got your medical training and you're looking at the body parts, but with the shamanic training, let's look at that right now. How are you looking at the body? Are there body parts? Is it chemical? Is it electrical? Is it all of these things? I mean, you know, what you
It's all of those and more, because I start to see imbalances in elemental energy, such as earth, air, fire, and water. I start to sense how I can look at it from different perspectives and get a different assessment. And I see life force. So I see the energy body, and I see the flow of chi and the densities where things are stagnant, and the voids where the chi isn't flowing at all. So it's a whole different world of awareness that I've learned from studying shamanism and other esoteric traditions. It's kind of exciting because it gives you a whole bigger repertoire to work with.
Absolutely. And in any shamanic study, and one would hope any kind of study, the connection to and depth of perception and one's ability to pay attention is really amped up. And I think that happens with any study. If you study medicine over here, your awareness is not necessarily going to be just linearly into medicine. It's going to broaden all of our perspective. But especially, I think, with shamanic study, it just amps up this perception and our ability to pay attention and really see those things you were just talking about. And can you give us a specific example of how you've observed your part of the journey? It's been, 15, 20 years or so that you've been involved in this, and then how it's benefiting your clients.
So the thing about, the one big thing about training in shamanism is you're encouraged to go into altered state. You're encouraged to allow your awareness to track off into the distance in time or space, or into that non-time, non-space, into other dimensions. So when you allow yourself to practice that altered, and you don't have to actually be tripping when you're in the doctor's office, but because you've got your senses willing to expand out. And then intuition starts to come in and you start to get a feeling. And before I did shamanism, I had some intuition, but since I trained in that and other metaphysical studies, my intuition is much, much improved. And I begin to feel things about the patient. I'll just share an example, and I'm changing the gender and the details. So the patient I'm talking about is not, I've altered it. So I had a young woman who had nightmares, horrible nightmares, and was having joint problems. And as I'm talking to her, and this is the first time I had met her, and I'm trying to sort out what the nightmares are, and she can't really give me any details. But then I said, then something tells me, and again, this is where when you train in metaphysical studies, many of them, meditation, other kinds of shamanic work, training in magic, druidry, you start to open to other data. So I get this intuitive hit that years ago, something bad happened to her. And I said, I'm getting this feeling that you've had something very traumatic happen to you. And she related to me that she saw a traumatic event involving someone else when somebody else was physically injured, and the evil in the bystanders, and saw them not at all upset what was happening, but actually kind of grinning, and that she had nightmares over this feeling of evil, that something was happening that should not have been happening. And instantly I could feel the black energy swirling around her, and I could feel the forces of evil that she had absorbed in her field from that encounter. And in my mind's eye, now obviously I'm in a traditional mainstream doctor's office at this moment, but in my mind's eye, I go into full shaman mode, calling on all my protectors with the intentional command, again, in my mind's eye, quietly in my own awareness, to clear that this needed to be gone. And so I was able to teach this patient a way to sit in sacred space and clear her field, a simple way, because she didn't understand this at all, but ways that I could tell her to do it, to clear her field and to think about, with all her protectors around, pulling the connections of that evil off of her, putting them into the fire, and doing the kind of extraction I would do if she were in my shamanic type of office. And I think those are places where people know when stuff happens, and with simple guidance, you can help them shift something. And when she came back a couple of months later, she told me that her dreams had quieted down, that she was able to sleep better, and that she didn't have that panic all the time. But, you know, as you probably know from all the people you've talked with, Robin, there's dark forces out there.
Well, here's something that all of this brings up for me is fear. As you just mentioned, that was something, it's palpable. You can feel it. You felt it in her, and you immediately put up your protections. My question is, in the finest of fine lines, are you buying into the fear by asking for protection? Is there not a universal field of pure grace or of creator or spirit that those lines never move into? And so are we not able to go into that place?
In my thinking, theoretically, absolutely, yes. But I do believe there are evil energies. And even though you, at the very primal of universal laws, you are sovereign, having that evil around you can drop your awareness. And it, in her case, this got into her field. It was there. It was real. Mm-hmm. So I acknowledge what I saw. I don't believe that I encouraged it by being aware of it. I was operating in her perspective with what was going on in her field. So I think we could argue it either direction. Anyway, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and I think that's where I feel like, once again, we are all heading. And for me, I feel like that's the difference between the metaphysical and spiritual. I definitely have a line where there's a difference there. And I think what we were just talking about is a good example of that. Moving on, as you just suggested, Western medicine really gets into naming diseases. And I think that sets up a storyline. For instance, like when AIDS came out, it was like all capital letters, AIDS. It's almost like an exclamation point being in all capital letters. And you bring up in your writing about dropping a storyline. So talk about losing the story, losing the past and its importance and how you've seen that work.
So to your first point, when we name, yes, Western medicine is all about classification and naming. But when you name something and give a construct to an energetic field or a viral field, you may indeed be acknowledging it more than you would like to. But these kinds of things, like HIV, like COVID, come with such, as my one of my spiritual teachers taught us, has thought form associated with it, the thought form in the collective.
Yes.
But if you get down to stories of everyday lives of the patients that I see, then those are the stories of, for me, when they hold on to the identity of their body in the imbalance that it's in at that moment. And for some reason, they define themselves within that imbalance. And to be able to shake that off and start to see themselves existing without that imbalance is oftentimes the first step to shifting it.
Mm. Yes, yes, well said. Do you work with affirmations and or intentions? And how different are they? On the one hand, they almost sound the same, doing affirmations and doing intentional work.
For me, when I think about it and feel into it, an affirmation is often a thought. And it's like a mantra. You're going to say it over and over and hopefully create the energy of that and then swim in the energy of that thought. For me, an intention is perhaps a little different in that you are linking up every single part of your being, your mind, your body, your psyche, your emotions, your soul, and it's absolutely heart-centered and heart-involved. Mm-hmm. An affirmation may not be so. An affirmation to me might slip into the thinking world more. But an intention, when it's well done, has serious heart energy and the resonance of and coherence of your inner world with your outer world. And I think that makes it much more powerful.
So is there a place where you go first when you have a client regardless, or a patient rather, that you make a suggestion almost across the board?
So what is my go-to advice that fits everyone? Mm-hmm. Probably for somebody to not go down the rabbit hole of seeing the worst in anything that comes up, to remember that there are other options, there are other possibilities, that there are miracles. So to keep themselves open from being pulled along the snowball rolling downhill, where everything that we see right away looks like it could mean badness, that it doesn't have to be, and to always be ready to keep an alternative view. That's probably my go-to advice in one way or another.
And do you have a practice or a meditation that fits the bill?
Probably for me, myself, maybe, but not when I tell patients. Not specifically, no.
Can you share yours?
So for me, it's about sitting in meditation in my heart space and remembering, even though I see the one forward path and it feels like all my momentum's going that way, that like a flashlight, the beam scatters and there are scattered edges that could lead somewhere else. So I can steer myself over. And I remember to my reading, reading a lot when I was younger of Carlos Castaneda's books and when Don Juan taught about the assemblage point, and remembering that you can move yourself over to one of these scatter beams and end up in a totally different universe than as if your momentum kept going straight. So in that sense, that kind of awareness is in my meditations.
Let's go back, if we can, a little bit to fear, because I feel like that is something that really is the basis for a lot of disconnect, right? Would you agree, or do you feel there are other stronger things at work these days?
I think fear has permeated our culture right now. I think it's the underpinnings of a lot of our divisiveness and our factions. In patients, I think what the side aspect of fear is self-doubt or lack of confidence, lack of belief. So to step out of that fearful spot that makes you not believe, and that's the biggest part of changing your story and changing your past.
In writing a book like what you've done, being a how-to book, what was your thought process in doing that? Someone can pick up a how-to book, but how do you really get them to engage with it and actually do the steps? Because that's the only way that it's going to really happen. This kind of work, although you have to grok it with your intellect, it doesn't work unless you do the work.
So my book is for people who also don't have the background that you and I have or your listeners have, who just need to be shown simple ways to start to shift. And the shifts are mostly in how they think. And the shifts are also in that ability to go to in meditation or in a quieter space, to be able to go into that deeper part of themselves and access their higher self, their soul, their universal connection, because I believe the source of healing is greatly amplified when we bring in those higher vibrations, those higher energies and powers. So my goal was to help somebody, an ordinary person, be able to, and if you have shamanic background, Reiki, energy medicine, sound healing, all of that, this stuff is still good to understand and try. Take yourself in an altered space. Have a meditative dialogue with your guardian angel. Have an insight brought to you by the wise one of your soul, your higher self, whatever you call it, because the insights that you get there, the awarenesses that you gain, are so much more than what you'll get from your day-to-day human literal world.
Yes, to say the least, right? How do you approach prayer?
In my neck of the woods, in my demographics, I use the word prayer when I ask somebody to go do meditation, because they might not even understand what meditation is. And I would use prayer also if I want to talk about sacred space. For those of us who would understand a more indigenous and metaphysical concept of sacred space, that is, again, that powerful sweet spot where you're linking up with the higher beings and you are putting your whole heart, mind, emotions there and asking for connection and asking for guidance, asking for grace, asking for deliverance from an issue. So to me, prayer and sitting in sacred space in meditation bring about the same thing. The energy that you step into and the elevated place you leave with is so wonderful, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Is there anything, Sharon, you would like to share with us in closing? I've been asking you questions, but obviously, by the way you speak about all of this, you have such a beautiful expertise and knowing. Maybe I would use that word knowing more than expertise.
Well, I think I want to just offer gratitude for those like yourself, Robin, who let me open up and speak about this, because my mission is to wake people up to take back their power. And so many of us feel like we're sort of caught in a rabbit hole of a disease or a life challenge. And there are ways out. And my book is about the ways out. And it's also about opening up health providers' eyes, especially the mainstream ones, that with simple awarenesses and changes in perception, you can really make a big difference.
Many thanks to Sharon E. Martin, author of Maximize Your Healing Power, for standing up and shining in this time of change with Western medicine, standing alongside shamanic and other age-old timeless energetic health care practices. For anything Tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are where you'd hope to find them. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.